And welcome back to the second half hour of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The idea of Alamo Plaza being redesigned has been debated perennially for decades. Critics attack the commercial nature of the Alamo's neighbors and the lack of larger grounds, among other issues. And with last year's alteration of the relationship of the Daughter of the Republic of Texas as the primary caretakers of the Alamo, what does the future of this historic and really important place look like? General Land Office Commissioner Jerry Patterson joins us, along with Nancy Avalar from the San Antonio Conservation Society and Ken Pfeiffer from the Sons of the Texas, Sons of the Republic of Texas. And so we're going to discuss the future of the Alamo. We invite you to join the conversation. The number to call is 614-8980, and welcome everyone to The Source. And so say something.
We enjoy the opportunity to talk about the Alamo.
Great. All right. So let's talk to Commissioner Patterson. Thank you so much for joining us on the phone, sir. I only have you for a few minutes. So tell me, where do you see the changes that should take place with the Alamo to make it more in line with a place that will honor the memories of our heroes?
I think the honor is present. I mean, it's just, you know, the story. And whether, no matter how much detail you know of the story, the honor and the things that make the hair on the back of your neck stand up or make you miss it bad are present there. What's lacking, though, is the enormity of the mission and the compound and the fortress, if you will, and how small scale it is now. I mean, there are people who are, for the first time, visiting the Alamo, and their first reaction is this all there is? And they don't realize that, you know, that's all there is now, but that's not all there was before, with the north wall and the west wall and where that footprint would be today. And we need to expand that footprint to the extent we can. I don't think we can ever reach expand the footprint and completely recreate the mission and the fortress as it was in 1836, but we need to do something to expand the footprint. We also need to enhance the visitor experience, and we, you know, need to do a lot of things that will bring it to the tourist destination and the place of honor that it deserves.
It is in the middle of vibrant San Antonio, and so is it landlocked? Do we have that ability to recapture some of that property and bring it back to what it was like during the Alamo's, like, the battle?
I don't think we can ever bring it back to the way it was. I mean, that would take a substantial amount of money, and it would take probably eminent domain. But I do think we should have an achievable goal of expanding the footprint and expanding the experience, which is going to take, acquisition of some property, and some cooperation with the city of San Antonio and all the stakeholders that have a vested interest in making the Alamo an even greater experience than it is, particularly for those people who are not Texans and who have not heard about the story for their entire lives, and they show up there and they just see this iconic facade, and that's about it.
Well, when you go to the Alamo now, you do have the intrusion of the sound coming from some of these commercial vendors who are across the street. They're very loud, and is that an issue for you?
Yes, it is, and I think there's certain things that can be done. The state owns a certain we own the real property there, but we don't own the real property out to the original footprint of the Alamo. Therefore, we have limited as to what we can do on that property that is not ours. But I think there's some things that the city of San Antonio can do, and there's been efforts made before, and now, the dynamic has dramatically changed. The Texas General Land Office is in charge of the Alamo, and we've contracted with our partners, the Daughters of the Republic of Texas. We think we bring things to the table that maybe the Daughters weren't as accomplished at, and allow them to do the things that they do well. So the arrangement we have now is a dramatic change. I mean, there would be no Alamo were it not for the Daughters, but the arrangement we have now is a dramatic change, and I think creates the opportunity to take it to the next level.
And that next level would be, of course, you already mentioned that you want to have be a more teaching experience about the battle and the sacrifices that were made at the Battle of the Alamo. But what how do we do that? What are some things that can be done, you know, concrete?
Well, you mentioned concrete. we've got a lot of concrete there where we didn't have concrete before, you know, 177 years ago. You know, again, like I said, we need to expand the footprint. We probably will be looking at trying to acquire some property. It may or may not be within the original footprint. We've done things already. I mean, you know, we've changed the dramatic improvement to the gift shop. We've made repairs. We've got an appropriation coming, we believe, this legislative session to do some other immediate things. We're soon to announce a Friends of the Alamo foundation or endowment to start dramatically ramping up the fundraising that'll be necessary to do all the things I'm talking about. We want to expand, although the daughters have done a good job of this over the last couple decades, we want to expand the story somewhat. I mean, one of my favorite stories is when I tell Texans around, when I go visit and speak about the Alamo or history of the land office, I always like to ask them, now, what flag flew in the Alamo? Well, the Texas flag, of course. Well, no, not exactly. You know, the flag that flew at least at the Alamo area or over the San Fernando Chapel was the Mexican tricolor with two stars in the white panel of the New Orleans Grays flag. And I like to emphasize the Tejano involvement, the fact that there were nine Tejanos who died at the Alamo, you know, almost have their names, many of them, you know, memorized. The fact that Lorenzo de Zavala was our vice president. And I'd like to talk about the entire period of rebellion that was going on in the Republic of Mexico of many states, or not just Texas. Zacatecas was in rebellion. So we want to expand the historical perspective of what was happening in Mexico and Tejas, and you know, at that time, and broaden the picture and try to educate people that this was not Mexicans versus Anglos, or Texans or Texans, it was tyranny versus liberty. And that's something that I think needs to be emphasized among all those youngsters who are growing up today with something different than the John Wayne movie, is what I grew up with, or Fess Parker on the Disney station.
All right. Well, Commissioner Patterson, thank you so much for joining us here on The Source. We appreciate and give us an insight on what your vision is for the future of the Alamo and Alamo Plaza.
All right. Well, thank you all. I've got the legislature's in session. We're real busy over here. So
oh, you do. All right. Okay. Good luck to you,
thank
sir.
Thank you.
All right. And so real quick, I want to get to a phone call real quick. I do want to get Al on the line, and he's got something he wants to bring up. Al, go ahead.
Hey, guys, how y'all doing? Interesting topic.
Go ahead.
You know, all my life I've heard that the history of the Alamo is probably one of the blackest pages in the history of the nation, probably even the world. It's such a myth.
Well, can you get, we're real tight on time, so tell me where you want to go with this.
What about the fact or the myth that it's the area around the Alamo is a burial ground, and there's probably hundreds of indigenous people buried there? Why do people trample all over it?
Okay, all right. And that is a very significant question, and we're going to get to that question when we come back. We're going to go to a break. And Al, thank you for the phone call, and we'll give our guest an opportunity to answer that when we come right back. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the future of Alamo Plaza. If you've got an idea, you want something to happen at Alamo Plaza, give us a call. We won't ask you for a pledge at this number. The number is 614-8980. With me in the studio, Nancy Avalar from the San Antonio Conservation Society, Ken Pfeiffer from the Sons of the Republic of Texas. Before we went to break, we had a question from Al. He wanted to know about the issue of indigenous burial sites at the Alamo, like we have at many of our historic missions in San Antonio and around the country. How is that being treated, honorably and respectfully? Ken, why don't you help us?
Well, Al was right. It is. There are parts of the grounds that are a burial site, just like for every church, as you just mentioned. And that would be part of at least our vision of what should happen on Alamo Plaza, that those those sites should be treated with respect, just like the rest of the site.
And recognized and not,
sure.
you know, evaporated
yeah.
or erased.
The mission period, all of that.
That's all part of the vision, is to
right.
remember the entire history of the Alamo. So, Nancy Avalar from the San Antonio Conservation Society, tell me about where you want to see the future of the Alamo.
Well, first of all, we understand that the Battle of the Alamo in 1836 really was the signal event. However, that mission existed from 1724 at that site until the time of the battle, and later, of course, it's still there. We believe that Alamo Plaza represents a continuum of San Antonio's history. The buildings on the west side represent the commercial growth that occurred because of the battle, actually, and the freedom that it brought us. And we do recognize and admit that there can be a better and more sensitive treatment of those buildings. One of the things, easiest solutions right now, is to replace the facades with the original historic facades, so there's not such a carnival-esque type atmosphere.
So you mean the facades across the street?
Yes. Uh-huh.
They have Ripley's, believe
right,
it or not.
They have been opened up, and their original facades have been removed, and they've been opened up so that they're, you know, provide easy access to their patrons. But, you know, it's certainly our hope that there could be, you know, one of the proposals made by Representative Mike Villarreal is that there would be a museum district created in that area. And we wholeheartedly support that type of treatment of those buildings. But again, everything in Alamo Plaza has been registered with a national landmark as a national landmark in 1977. So those buildings are equally as historic.
Well, I know people in San Antonio have an opinion about the Alamo. Give us a call, 614-8980. Do you think that it's too loud and disruptive at the Alamo with the people, you know, the almost like carnival barkers in front of some of these shops bringing people in? And you can hear that as you go to the Alamo. It kind of, you know, disrupts the, you know, historic feel of the Alamo. So what's the solution to that? The number is 614-8980. Nancy, I mean, these are private businesses.
Well, they are private businesses. And where, you know, where does the government or the city, how are they able to mitigate some of this? Again, not allowing the signage. And that is already has occurred. The signage is controlled. Not allowing the barkers out on the sidewalk, restoring their storefront facades as they would have been originally. And, you know,
so the city could order them, I want to take down the, you know, the zombies and whatever else they have out there, put in the historic structure.
Well, we feel that the owners of those buildings could be required to restore their facades, yes. Or replace them, in a way that was compatible with their original design.
Okay, we recently had a flare-up with the Joskies building, and they wanted to put in a tower there. And it was, you know, pretty impressive hotel proposal. And it would bring jobs and it would bring more commerce to the area. But it would also have the possibility of casting a shadow on the Alamo, which is...
Absolutely, absolutely. And also on St. Joseph's Catholic Church, which is on... to the south of it, which is also another very historic building. It's interesting to me that those that decry the commercialism on the west side of Alamo Plaza are fully supporting this imposition of this very large building just to the south, within
okay.
just yards away.
So you're saying you support the fact that the Historic Review Commission denied the...
Absolutely.
And you don't want to see a big mega hotel put on top
no,
of Joskies.
No, that would be demolition of a historic building, and the Joskies building is a historic building.
And did you want to jump on that, Ken Pfeiffer?
That's outside the focus of what we're after, which is really Alamo Plaza, although there's many historic activities that could be very denigrating to the area and the site.
Was the Alamo moved? The Alamo had been moved.
It was founded in 1718 along San Pedro Creek, and in fact, some recent excavation on a site along San Pedro Creek has turned up some artifacts that prove that they may know the original location. But it was moved upstream after 1718 and 1724.
But this is the Mission de Valero, not
yes,
the Alamo.
San Antonio de Valero.
So when we say, was the Alamo moved, not the... actual
building,
not like the O. Henry House that we have downtown. That was moved several times. It's not where it actually is. But
no, but the site was moved. Complete site was moved.
Okay, but it's still kind of confusing to people. Mm-hmm. The Battle of the Alamo happened right there downtown.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's what we got to know. All right. Okay, now Bob wants to join the conversation, and let me click the right button. Bob, go ahead. You're on the source.
Yes, thank you. Well, I just wanted to address the fact that, you know, people have to realize that the state owns about 24% of the original footprint versus about 64% that the city of San Antonio owns, and that private sector on the West Wall is about 10%. And, of course, North Wall went to the lobby of the post office, which is federal, about 7%. So addressing all this multi-jurisdictional recognition of this national landmark, we also have application for a World Heritage Site. The Mission Trails start here. It's the first of our five. It's not often recognized, although we certainly, as a member of the San Antonio Living History Association, do the interpretation of the battle reenactments and other historical events that happened there.
So your question is?
The question is that why are people proposing to, yes, we want to return the site to hallowed ground status and recognition, but they're also pushing for streetcar rails going through there, which when you don't have them through Mission San Jose or any of the other missions.
Okay, all right.
It's a conflict.
All right, Bob, thank you for that. So streetcars going by the Alamo. I mean, already the mayor has come out and said he does not support any plan that will bring the streetcars through the in front of Alamo Plaza.
Great. I'm supporting that. I think that would be a one of those things that would be a degradation of the site. This isn't Disneyland.
Right.
We oppose streetcars as well in front of the Alamo.
So let's give me a good idea, Ken, on where you want to see the transformation of Alamo Plaza. Do you think that the businesses, we got to mute those things at least?
Well, that's part of it, but there's some simple things that could be done and fairly inexpensive, like improved signage, better landscaping to remove some of the curbs because, it looks like multiple streets running through the middle of it. Could the city on their land recreate the south wall and the main gate? Yeah, they could, and it would be a great improvement in the historical interpretation.
So there are a lot of things that happen at the Alamo, and we have marathons that run through there and start there. And is that a problem? I mean, this is part of our heritage. It's part of our life. I mean, do we just make it only like it has to be very, calm and reserved type of a place?
I think it has to be done judiciously. There are things that are very disrespectful, and then there's things that happen as part of a living community. And so that – on a item-by-item basis, it would have to be judged in that.
So who does that, Nancy?
Well, there is no one person that has jurisdiction over that,
okay,
I think, at this point.
All right. So I got a more phone call I want to get to. Barbara's on the line. Barbara, welcome to The Source.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. Go ahead.
Well, what I wanted to say is that I think you're discussing a very small part of the picture. I don't see the Alamo as a monument to war, though that is what is being considered here. I want to see the Alamo as a monument to peace. I think it should be a wailing wall so that Latinos and whites and African Americans could come together and tell their story.
All right, Barbara, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Appreciate your input. But, people call it the cradle to Texas liberty. Is it really a monument to war or a monument to liberty?
Well, I think you could say both. But probably the most moving component of that is one of the defenders, Toribio Lasoya, of which Lasoya Street was named. He was born there. He was a Mission Indian and descendant there, and he died there defending the Alamo.
That's part of the history that we need to bring up more often.
That's the whole thing, and all the way back to the very beginnings.
All right. Well, I want to thank everyone who is participating in our conversation about the Alamo, our callers and our guests that we have in the studio, Nancy Avalar from the San Antonio Conservation Society, Ken Pfeiffer from the Sons of the Confederate Veterans. Earlier, we heard from General Land Office Commissioner Jerry Patterson. You've been listening to The Source on KSTX. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Wayne Coble is the TPR program director. Chris Udaly is our web producer. We get production help from Catherine Dixon. I'm David Martin Davies. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.